Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Not long because the TV's on. Not crazy because I listen to Columbia House Party every week. Jake, what's going on, man?
So, that one worked the best so far.
I'm getting like all right that. At them, man.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that one felt good out of the hand.
Right out of the hand. Yeah,
yeah,
looked good.
Yeah, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I got new pants that I'm really excited about. So I'm feeling good, feeling comfortable.
All right.
Yeah.
Are they're like new pants for the sake of new pants? Like this is fashion, Jake?
Yeah, I need a new pants, but they're the Uniqlo Yeezys, and they feel like sweatpants, and they look like jeans, and they kick ass.
Zoobs is high on those as well.
They're worth the hype. I highly recommend them. I'm super comfortable right now. I'm in a good mood.
All right. Didn't know we were sponsored by Uniqlo.
Well,
here we go.
Not yet.
Here we go.
Uniqlo presents Columbia House Pants.
Yeah, I'm just wearing head to toe Sportsfeld merch. Not actually.
No.
They don't sell pants.
Not yet.
That would just be me in a t-shirt like
not
Winnie
yet.
The Pooh.
The official uniform of Sportsfeld. T-shirt, no pants.
There you go. All of us work from home most of the
that's
time.
That's true. I didn't leave my house much yesterday, but that's okay.
So when we first set out to do this podcast, I had no idea we'd be talking about 9/11 so often.
It comes up a lot, right?
Today's band, they had already produced today's album and released today's album when 9/11 happened, which led to amazing pieces of writing around 9/11 and around this album, like, end quote, nobody could have predicted what happened next.
Is that about 9/11 or about the album?
That's about 9/11.
Ah, okay.
But Nostradamus. Look, in high school, I went deep down the conspiracy theory.
I remember hearing about that and learning about Nostradamus when I was younger and just being like, I'm afraid of this person.
Yeah, I'm terrified.
I mean, I was afraid of everything.
Terrified. But don't say it could not have been predicted.
No. Also, the success of this album could not have been predicted.
That's true. Today, we're talking about Jimmy Eat World. Jimmy Eat World, a Jimmy Eat World podcast on our podcast, Columbia House Party, which you should like, rate, subscribe, all that stuff.
All those fun things.
All those great things. And keep sending us feedback so we can get better at this.
I'm not alone because I like and subscribe to Columbia House Party.
There you go. Leave that to me.
Yeah, that's your domain.
There's a reason I opened. The Jimmy Eat World episode could have gone a number of ways. I think there are three different Jimmy Eat World albums that people maybe would have thrown at us to do. At least two. That
two
are
for sure. Three maybe.
Worthy of deep exploration. Jake, today's your album. What do you got for us?
All right. So I'm going to tee it up here.
Do it.
So it's the summer of 2001. I'm 12. I'm almost 13. I'm starting to get into what will eventually become the beginning of my current musical taste development. I'm deep into pop punk. My favorite band in the world is a band called Green Day, you might have heard of. I've listened to the Mark, Tom, and Travis show so much that I've memorized all of the Gay Panic stage banter. I'm a few months out from going to my first concert without parental supervision, which was naturally The Offspring, Cypress Hill, and MXPX, as you do. I've also started downloading music on Napster and making myself little mix CDs, which is how I will listen to music for the next 5 years. I'm a few months away from developing my first real crush. So this is a formative time for me. I'm also listening to a lot of Edge 102, a radio station here in Toronto. And a song I keep hearing this summer is by a band that I don't know with a name that I think is funny. It's very loud. And it's still 2001, so you have to wait for the DJ to say what the song is. I buy the CD immediately. The band is called Jimmy Eat World. The song is called Bleed American. American was released on July 24th, 2001. It was, to get into the 9/11 thing, was re-released after 9/11 as self-titled Jimmy Eat World. The song Bleed American was renamed Salt, Sweat, Sugar because it was on that Clear Channel list of sensitive media.
Yeah, Bleed American, not a great name in a posted 9/11 environment.
No, but man, a weird time for like sensitivity surrounding names and art, like understandable.
Yeah, and album artwork.
Yes, a lot of censored album artwork. The Strokes' This Is It, I believe, was also their album art was changed in America, and it was also one of those 9/11 albums. Yankee Hotel Foxtrot by Wilco was released before 9/11, but was originally scheduled to be released on 9/11, and its cover features two towers in Chicago, which would have been weird. There's also a song on that album called Ashes of American Flags.
Wow.
So we'll get into that one day.
Meet Me in the Bathroom, which is a great book we've mentioned on this podcast before, and you should check out. There is a section, the book's in, I think, four sections, and one of the sections, the chapter is just, the leading chapter in that section is just titled September 11th.
Yeah.
And the, like, opening quotes about it, I don't have them in front of me because I didn't realize we'd be talking about this much about 9/11, but yeah, the writing around 9/11, man.
Yeah, it was definitely a time. Anyway.
Wait for the 9/11 episode. The bonus
Columbia
episode on Patreon.
Columbia, yeah. Inside Jobs. I'm kidding. I don't believe in
Epstein,
that.
Though.
Yeah. anyway, Bleed American. So Jimmy Eat World had been a band for a few years at this point. They released an album before this in 1999 called Clarity, which is sort of held up as one of the tent poles of emo, I think. It's definitely, there's a lot of parallels, I think, more parallels than I actually thought originally between Jimmy Eat World and Weezer and Pinkerton, which we talked about in episode one. So Jimmy Eat World had released a self-titled record in 1994. The band has sort of disavowed since. I've never actually heard it. But Jim Adkins, the lead singer of Jimmy Eat World, has said that it sounded like them trying to be what every band on Epitaph sounded like in 1994. They released their official quote-unquote debut, Static Prevails, in 1996, and then Clarity in 1999. Clarity was a turning point for the band. For one, it was the first album that Jim Adkins sang lead on, the guitarist.
Important change, given that I think his voice is the thing people most associate with Jimmy Eat World at this
absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. They were being pushed by Capitol Records as sort of being the next big thing. Emo was slowly starting to creep into the mainstream at this point. Obviously, Pinkerton came out in 96 and tanked, but bands like Jimmy Eat World and the Get Up Kids were sort of starting to make a little bit of waves, and record labels were starting to see what was coming as pop music was sort of still dominating the charts, which is one of the reasons that Clarity did not succeed the way Capitol Records hoped. They pushed the album really hard. They got the song Lucky Denver Mint, which was the lead single in a little movie you might have seen called Never Been Kissed, a Drew Barrymore classic. So this is what Lucky Denver Mint sounded like. This time it's on my own. Minutes from somewhere else. Somewhere I may. So very in line with the sound of emo at that time. Like, that could easily be, you put Ben Gibbard singing that song and it could easily fit in with early Death Cab songs or Dashboard or whatever you want, whatever Killer have track. You. Great song, but very different.
Great movie.
Yes, great movie.
Is that on Netflix?
I think fire so. That up. It might be. But that classic. movie is we're just talking about Everyone Kissed now.
This is a movie slash music podcast the last 2 weeks now.
That's true. Well, two bands that were featured on a ton of soundtracks.
It's a good way to get successful in that era.
I mean, still, it's true.
But like,
it was a big thing because people bought soundtracks.
Yeah.
So Clarity was very much an emo tentpole. It has been raved about by bands of this current generation. Jonathan Corley, who is the bass player for Manchester Orchestra, said that Clarity changed how he looked at music. RTE Entertainment called it the Led Zeppelin 4 of emo. Alternative Press said, like Pinkerton before it, the album has gone on to serve as the birthplace of emo's third wave. The 16-minute closing track Goodbye Sky Harbor, with its organic breakdown and electronic buildup, is often imitated but never duplicated, proving it's far better to test your limits than rely on the parameters of others, which is exactly why Clarity resonates with tens of thousands of people a decade later. And writing for Stylus magazine, Charles Merwin said that it's a minor masterpiece, a product of its time, and is as important to modern emo as Weezer's Pinkerton. However, our friends at Pitchfork gave it a 3.5, despite its... And Jim Adkins, the singer of Jim Eat World, has said that, oh man, he also did a review of Bleed American. I think those are some of my favorite reviews, actually.
The review of Bleed American is so poorly written that, like,
I believe it calls them akin to Slobodan Milosevic at one point.
Yeah, the guy also if that's the one that I'm thinking of, yeah, it's he like makes the joke of like, oh, I just wrote a Jimmy Eat World lyric.
But yeah,
no offense to that person, but like, writing two really critical and bad reviews of a band is, it's fine, it's subjective. Criticizing their songwriting while writing the review really poorly is at least a little ironic.
One day we'll do a whole episode about the Kid A Pitchfork review. Jim Adkins said at the time, the band, what we saw on the ground was us touring around on our own, playing shows, and every time we'd come back to a city, the show would be a little bit bigger, or we'd get an opening slot for a bigger band. I think the metrics of what people use to gauge success, that was all completely in the background for us. What we saw, that's what was happening for us. When Lucky Denver Mint got into the Drew Barrymore movie and the radio started playing a little bit, we saw the label kind of kick it into gear, but we still thought it was funny. We didn't take anything seriously. It wasn't a world we gave a crap about. And I think Capitol Records agreed, because when Clarity came out and was not successful, they were dropped from Capitol. So Jimmy World got themselves together and they went on a extensive year-long tour. They released a compilation album called Singles in 2000. And then Zach Lind, drummer of Jimmy Eat World, said, "The label didn't really believe in us, but in a way that was sort of a good thing because it let us take control of what we needed to do. What we learned what we had to do ourselves because no one else was going to do it for us." And Jim Adkins had said, "We owe this record to fans coming out to shows." So Jimmy Eat World took the money they made from the tour, the money they made from the singles compilation, and then they booked some studio time and went in to record Bleed American. And we'll get into that after this.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So I think it's important to note, before we get into Bleed American, that another major thing happened for Jimmy Eat World before this album came out, which is very important to this podcast in particular, in that Jimmy Eat World were asked to play a wedding in Las Vegas that in 2001.
I love this story.
The wedding was by friend of the show, Mr. Tom DeLonge of Blink-182. And like, is 2001, Tom DeLonge getting married while Jimmy Eat World play is like, oh, okay. That's a world. They had toured together before. Just like, I can't believe they played Tom DeLonge's wedding.
Totally normal.
Definitely not what I feel like a Tom DeLonge wedding would look like in 2019. Too normal. Yeah. I think.
There would be no Earth bands playing, that's for sure.
Just weird cover bands of the Close Encounters theme. Anyway, Jimmy Eat World set out to make Bleed American. They had Mark Trombino producing. He also produced Clarity. He would also start producing Futures. He also produced, speaking of Tom DeLonge, a little record called Dude Ranch. So Mark Trombino kind of kicks ass. They didn't budget enough money for Mark Trombino to produce. So he ended up producing this record for free, because he was so confident that the album would be a commercial success, that he would get, reimbursed by that.
Big bet,
especially for a band that had just fucking tanked.
But the sound was there.
The sound was there. Speaking of the sound, change it up a little bit from Clarity. I think, as we said, Clarity very much sticks in that late 90s
emo,
you know, Texas is the Reason, Promise Ring world. Bleed American, they went a little more aggressive in the music, a little more, or a lot more, radio friendly. I think
high energy.
And I think it wouldn't be out of the realm of accuracy, I guess, to say that I wouldn't even really call this an emo record. I know it is one of the big quote unquote emo records, and I do think that we'll get into this in a second, but the success of the album In the Middle specifically, without that, I don't think modern emo is what it became. Not necessarily because of influence, just because of literally commercial success.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't call this an emo record. It's definitely a pop rock record. It's definitely a mainstream pop rock record. But the songs are really good. And one of those songs you've definitely heard before, and I have an entire section in my notes dedicated to just this song, and that's The Middle.
Hey, got yourself off that. It's only in your head you feel left out. Look down on. Just do your best. Do everything you can. And don't you worry what their bitter hearts are gonna say. It just takes some time. Little girl, give a little half the ride. Everything, everything will be just fine. Everything, everything will be alright.
So you know that song. I know that song. Everyone knows that fucking song.
Never heard it before.
The Middle was a ridiculously big song, especially for a band that had never even approached success like this before. It was the first single off the album, I believe. It by early 2002, the song had reached the top of the Billboard Modern Rock's track chart. It then crossed over into the top 40 chart, resulting in it reaching a peak of number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100. Despite Pitchfork's original bad review of Bleed American, Pitchfork named this track the 165th best song of the top 500 tracks of the 2000s. Mark Richardson, writing for Pitchfork, said, "If your band delivers that message of hope with this kind of power pop chorus hook that gives the best couple of Weezer songs a run for their money, you've accomplished something."
Sometimes simplicity goes a long way.
Yeah, and it's, I think I was reading an article today that Ian Cohen wrote for The Ringer about Jimmy World, where he described it as Bruce Springsteen talking to a 14-year-old girl, which I don't know if that metaphor tracks, but...
Also don't know if... I think we can search for less weird metaphors.
But the band wrote the song basically to pick themselves up after the commercial failure of Clarity and the sort of uncertainty that laid ahead of them because of where they were as a band. And the weirdest part I found about The Middle is that the guitar solo was written as a tribute to Doug Gillard of Guided by Voices, a great band that I love, but not a connection I would have made with The Middle.
Yeah. My thing about the guitar solo is that the music video ruins it by part of it being underwater. You know, in the yep. in the music yeah, video, yeah, they're yeah. playing a house party, and a couple times in the video, the camera goes underwater, and then you hear the music distorted through yep. the underwater. Don't do that during the kick-ass guitar solo.
It's like, yeah, it's the big climax of the thing.
I will say, the one kid being in a plaid shirt over a t-shirt in the pool like that, I was like, oh, it's like Jake hopped in the pool.
I relate to this.
Yeah. Yeah, he had your exact wardrobe on right now.
Not wear a plaid shirt over a band t-shirt? What are you? Speaking of house parties, Jason Heller, who is a great writer, he used to write for the AV Club, wrote an article in 2012 called How the Middle Became the Best Song for a Bad Time. And I think this sort of encapsulates a lot of the feelings around this song in the scene, so to speak, because I think we've seen this with other bands before where sort of an underground band, or at least have a lot of cred in a scene. Then they write a pop song and the pop song blows up. You know, you saw it with Against Me and Thrash Unreal. You've seen it with the entirety of like Frank Turner's career. Jason Heller, writing for the AV Club, wrote about how tracking Jimmy Eat World's career, because in 1996, Jimmy Eat World played a show at Jason Heller's house, because that's what they were doing in 1996, playing basements, house shows as you start. Heller said, "Oh, how I loathe that goddamn song. When I first heard it, I did a double take. That was Adkin's voice, all right. Beyond that, I can't recognize a single element of Jimmy Eat World anywhere in the middle. The chord progression came out of a can. The lyrics were teen angst boilerplate. It was stupidly simple, inanely upbeat. Even worse, it was everywhere. An earworm that bore its way into my skull from passing cars and random televisions. Before, Jimmy Eat World had been uttered in the same breath as Sunny Day Real Estate. Now it was lumped in with Unwritten Law. The Middle received a different kind of post-9/11 boost, though.
There we go.
Viewed through the horrific lens of that attack's aftermath, the lyrics of The Middle aren't cheesy at all. Okay, so maybe they're still the cheesiest thing ever written, but sometimes cheese is called for. As much as it hurts to admit, I got caught up in the whole sellout fervor. The debate about selling out has been rehashed to death over the decades, and Jimmy Eat World has been at the center of a fair share of those arguments. The bottom line, though, is this. The Middle is a pop-punk song written by a band that started out making pop-punk songs. Granted, The Middle isn't raw, fast, and sloppy like 1994's Jimmy Eat World, but the spirit is the same. The middle wasn't a sellout, it was a return to form, one made by a band that had a lot more wisdom, scars, and songwriting talent than it did 7 years prior, and a band that was in a position where do or die looked like the only options.
I always find it interesting when a band that got dropped by their label and like self-financed this album get called, oh, you sold out.
It's right?
Like, no, they
worked really hard.
Kind of the opposite. I do feel what he's saying in that passage though, where when I was in high school, I kind of swerved away from Jimmy Eat World because the middle was just like, it was too present and that I got annoyed of that song and I would just listen to other stuff. So there was like there's a pretty big lapse in my Jimmy Eat World fandom for a couple years before I went back to Bleed American. I was like, oh no, this kicks ass.
I do think it's an interesting song in the context of the album too, because it is like, yes, there are a ton of like pop hits on this album for sure, but the middle is the poppiest, hittiest of them all. And it's like, it's not quite as distorted as some of the other tracks. And it's just, it does feel sort of like an outlier on the album. Or maybe it's just the fact of like the song was everywhere and it's impossible to separate it from the rest of the album. You're just like, oh, now it's time for the middle. But I like it's a great song. It's just weird.
I don't want to pivot the conversation that you're leading, but it's also not the most nonsensical song.
Oh,
the most nonsensical pop song on the album.
Not even close. There could be several you're referring to.
I'm referring to one in particular that I think is also iconic within the genre. Just for, you know, the hook.
Oh, so you're talking about Sweetness.
Yeah, I'm talking about Sweetness, yeah. which I have the lyrics in front of me and they don't say anything. They're just, whoa, 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 whoa.
If you're listening, whoa.
So the thing about Sweetness is that it fucking owns.
It's awesome.
Sweetness was leaked on Napster well before the release of the album and was played at that tour that financed the album and became a fan favorite that the band was going to throw out the song, but fans liked it so much they decided to include on the album. Jim Adkins said, it's just such a ridiculous melody. I had this melody in my head and I was demoing it and singing it and kind of having a hard time with it. I almost didn't bring it to the band because I was just thinking to myself, I can't just say nothing. I can't just use all of these alyrical woes for this much of a song.
Counterpoint, you can, and it can kick ass, and it does, and you did. That song is the best.
Sweetness also became a massive hit. It reached number 2 on the alternative charts, hit 40 on the adult top 40, and 75 on the Hot 100. So you can just whoa in with a sweet guitar riff and make it work.
You can absolutely do that.
Also, I know that song was on, I want to say NHL 2002 or something like that. I could have sworn that Bleed American, the song, was also on an NHL game, but apparently it wasn't. I have like memories of that being in a video
game. Was it
game.
On? It might have been on a different video game.
No, there's like a Wikipedia of video game soundtracks. You
can't find it?
Can't find it. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe. Question for you.
Yes.
Since you mentioned Bleed American. In retrospect, should Sweetness have led the album just because of how iconic the start of that song is?
I don't know. I don't think so. I like Bleed American as an opener, especially because of their change in sound. Mm-hmm. Bleed American is it's like such an announcement of
intent.
And like, this is what we sound like now, because like for the rest of their career going forward, they would never sound like Clarity again.
Right.
For all intents and purposes, Bleed American in many ways is the first Jimmy Eat World record as we think of Jimmy Eat World currently. Like, I saw them at Turf in 2016 and did not expect them to kick as much ass as they did. And they were genuinely incredible.
And they still kind of sound like that. Like they're not, it's not as good as Bleed American or Futures, but they still, like, they had a new album come out this year, and it's exactly what you would think. If you had listened to Bleed American and Futures, even if you didn't listen to anything after that, and you were like, I wonder what Jimmy Eat World sounds like in 2019, it sounds kind of like that.
Yeah, they played, I don't know what the song was, because I don't really know the later albums of Jimmy Eat World that well. But the when they played these songs in their set, they fit in seamlessly, but they definitely sound like this. And it was, they were awesome. They were so good. But I think Bleed American is necessary as a track one, as an announcement of, like, this is what Jimmy Eat World is, like it or don't. And obviously everyone did, because how could you not? It's just the simplest pop rock, but it, in a good way. Another song I love on this album, and I love it because there's nothing I love more than bands I like referencing other bands I like, is a song called A Praise Chorus. Are you gonna live your life wondering, standing in the back, looking around? Are you gonna waste your time thinking how you grown up or how you missed out? So this song is riddled with guest vocalists, and by riddled, I mean there's two. One is Petra Hadden, who you might, from That Dog, who you might remember was going to be one of the voices on Songs from the Black Hole by Weezer, another connection there. Also, this song features Davey Von Bolen from a band called The Promise Ring, who, very much Jimmy Eat World's peers, one of the greatest emo bands of all time, the inspiration for the title of the book Nothing Feels Good by Annie Greenwald, just a massive band in the genre. Davey sings on this song. The Davey in the final chorus of saying, come on, Davey, sing a song that I know, is referencing Davey specifically.
How cool must that be as a band?
Right?
You're just like, yeah, we love The Promise Ring. We'll get them on. And Hayden, too. I mean, Hayden pops up all over. There are a couple of times. She did some Weezer stuff,
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah, she was going to be one of the voices on Song of the Black Hole.
Right.
She's everywhere in early emo as well. Maybe we'll do a That Dog record one day. Davey apparently was asked by Jim Adkins that he needed some lyrics for the song. He couldn't quite figure it out, so they sent him a rough mix. So Davey then booked some studio time and added the lyrics. Jim Adkins said, Davey decided to kind of play up the line immediately coming out of the bridge where I sing, come on Davey, sing me something that I know. He basically quoted a bunch of other people's songs, including Tommy James's Crimson and Clover, Madness's Our House, and Motley Crue's Kickstart My Heart. Also quotes his own band, Promise Ring, with Why Did We Ever Meet? And he quotes a They Might Be Giants song, Don't Let's Start, which I will always take any excuse to talk about They Might Be Giants. But to do another 9/11 connection.
Oh, no.
They Might Be Giants album Mink Car came out on September 11th and tanked because of it. So it's all one story.
Wow.
I love the idea of just like, it's very like Weird Al thing. Like, here's a medley of song lyrics, you know, all sung together.
Yeah.
In a new tune.
Absolutely. And it works. It's a great tune.
Also, using your own lyrics and someone else, the self-retweet of music writing. Amazing.
Well, the Promise Ring were kind of fading by the wayside at this point. I think it gave them a little boost. The band had some big ideas for this album, I think. Maybe bigger than actually come across in the songs themselves. Jim Atkins said that things got pretty gnarly in the studio as far as experimentation, but it was always to an end that was complementary to the song. We wanted to really make sure that we weren't doing things just to put a wacky keyboard sound in. It had to be something constructive for the song. And when I listen to this album, I don't hear any of that. Like, there's a piano bouncing and praise chorus and...
But it's mostly guitar and singing.
Yeah. It's a four-piece being a four-piece. And I think it's interesting, too, when you have... There's a few songs in this record that kind of... You know, all of a sudden you're hearing, like, the old Jimmy Eat World but filtered through this new...
approach?
New lens, new approach. I'm thinking specifically of songs like Your House, which could have fit on Clarity if it was produced a little rawer, I think.
Yeah. I love that. That song is an unbelievable post-breakup song.
Yeah.
Of just, if you don't love me at all, don't call. Like, just leave me alone.
Man, but like, I think, and that song is such a perfect example of what Jimmy Eat World became. It's got emo lyrics. Jim Atkins' voice slots in very well alongside his emo contemporaries.
He looks the part.
And then they put this like little boppy pop song behind it. And it's like, oh, okay, I see. Bleed American, the song. Jim Atkins said it was sort of a discussion on how trivial things in your life can end up putting the things that are really important in the back seat. He also tried to tie it to a larger sense of America, where we kind of give ourselves a lot of rope to hang ourselves with. You see ads all the time advertising Paxil and anti-anxiety drugs, and you don't think about whether this is something that's been going on always or if this is just the new trend that's only come about recently where people are this screwed up. A very 2001 quote. I think we've come a little further about anxiety and drugs since. But they had big ideas and big thoughts they wanted to say. Whether or not they really got them across, I don't know. But Bleed American was a ridiculous success. It's still got a 3.5 from Pitchfork again.
Naturally.
Absolute Punk, in their review, said that praising this album is something that can't be done enough. It has no bad songs. Drowned in Sound's Terry Bezzer said it's 11 of the finest songs you'll hear this or any other year. Q listed it as one of the 50 best albums of 2001. In 2017, Rolling Stone listed it at number 25 of its greatest pop punk albums of all time list. It made Spin's 300 best albums of the past 30 years list at 183. And I think the biggest thing that I want to get into after the break is its place in the emo landscape and how without this album, I kind of alluded to this earlier, without this album and without the middle, emo doesn't really exist in the way we know it now.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
So in 2001, 2002, I think could be argued are the two most important years of emo going mainstream. In 2001, you have Thursday's Full Collapse, you have Bleed American, you have Brand New's Your Favorite Weapon, you have Dashboard's The Places You Have Come to Fear the Most, you have Eudora by the Get Up Kids, and you have Stay Where You Are by Saves the Day, all in the same year.
Whew.
And then 2002 would see albums like The All-American Rejects. Bright Eyes was coming out. Their Newfound Glory's album came out in 2002. Taking Back Sunday released Tell All Your Friends 2002. So this was right as the boom was happening. And I think the middle specifically proved how commercially successful this music could be. Because if you look at 90s emo. You look at bands like Braid and Texas Is the Reason and American Football and Sunny Day Real Estate and all the figureheads. It's very much pop music just set to guitars, but it wasn't the most marketable style pop music. It was a little too aggressive. It was a little too shoegazy in a way, a little too weird. Not shoegazy, navel gazy.
Gazing somewhere.
Gazing somewhere.
And not enough gazing just at the lake or the river or body of water. No. That's where you need to go.
But then The Middle comes out. And AllMusic and Andy Greenwald both credited as bringing emo pop to the mainstream. And you can totally track the path of The Middle's insane success. And then you look at Dashboard, who released a record the same year, actually before Bleed American came out, but didn't find their major success until later. And it's like, oh, yeah. I see why Chris Carava is now a rock god. Because
this adds up.
Yeah. So I mean,
he had a few other things working in his favor as well.
But I just wanted to talk about that because I know you are a big 2001, 2002 emo head.
Yeah.
And because I think I was like 13, 14 at that time, I was very much in my musical discovery phase where like everything was just kind of new to me. So I don't think I really sat in just the genre like you did, having a little more time to like settle into your music. So I'm curious as to, from the guy who, you know, really liked Taking Back Sunday, really liked that sort of era, what your take on Jimmy Eat World and The Middle and their place in sort of the development of mainstream emo was, and did The Middle reach you in that sense, or were you stuck in your like brand new Taking Back Sunday world and it just happened to be the thing that lifted it up?
Yeah, more the latter. I had liked Clarity. The Middle drove me nuts. And like I said, there was a lapse where it wasn't until I went back to Bleed American after. But obviously the accessibility of so many of these bands, like Bleed American came out and I would have listened to that less than some of the other albums you named from 01, 02. You know, again, even though I liked Clarity and I was kind of right in the target age of, I would have been what? This was 01, so I would have been 15.
Yeah.
Going on 16. So man, I'm old. it was more, you know, that would have been lower on the depth chart of what I was listening to at the time, right. But it helped in a few senses is, you know, one, when you're at that time, especially online, you're finding music through other music, right? And the people who like Jimmy Eat World probably have some similar tastes to you, and that's helpful. And then bigger picture, and you look ahead to, you know, we did an episode about From Under the Cork Tree, which came out in 2005. And that had kind of a further wave effect to it with a lot of bands that we'll talk about. You know, so I have a deep appreciation of Bleed American's success and kind of accessible sound because of what it opened up for other groups. And, you know, Taking Back Sunday gets a little more publicity, Dashboard Confessional. And then, you know, being a high school kid at the time, well, Jimmy Eat World, if someone asks, you know, what punk and emo music you're into, well, Jimmy Eat World's a lot easier thing to be like, this is kind of what it sounds like. Yeah. Than, you know, here's this other stuff.
Well, yeah, you have a song like Hear You Me, yeah, which is like, was on the OC and yeah, sounds like it was on the OC. And no parent is going to have a problem with like you listening to that ruckus. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Whereas, yeah, my parents were checked out on the music at that point. You know, Slipknot was in the mix around then too. So Disturbed. I was jumping all over the place a little bit.
A little stupefied.
Yeah, but I didn't love Jimmy Eat World in the moment that much. But obviously, like zooming out now and you look at, you know, the tree or routing of however you want to draw out, oh, emo and pop punk came from this,
yeah,
and went into these different branches. And, you know, we've joked about the R emo subreddit and how they are very specific about what goes in what stream. Well, Jimmy Eat World is a pretty important, you know, connecting station.
Yeah.
If you're drawing out, you know, I have in mind right now, you know how Minor Leaguer does the Blue Jays transaction, like the TTC map. That's how I'm picturing.
Yeah,
these, instead of just a straight tree, it's like, okay, well, there's this line here, but you can get off of Jimmy Eat World and go to this pop rock direction, or you can stay on it and it gets a little more emo.
I agree with that. And I also think that it's also helpful when navigating sort of the quote unquote waves. Mm-hmm. You know, because like you have, you know, the first wave, which you can trace back to like Rites of Spring and even some Fugazi and Descendants and all that. And then you get into like second wave where you bring in, you know, that, and then like Sunny Day, then Jawbreaker came.
Yeah.
And Jawbreaker brought us to the station of Sunny Day Real Estate and Texas The Reason and Braid and Jimmy Eat World. And then Jimmy Eat World came and they brought us to the station of Dashboard and Taking Back Sunday and all that. And then they, took it and brought it to where it is kind of today.
Right.
And I think Jimmy World are a, not only from a sound perspective, but just from a commercial perspective, mm-hmm. brought it from being this little underground thing of sad boys to a mainstream thing of sad boys.
Yeah. It's also a huge thing of, you know, maybe at that point there was still some doubt as to whether the albums could be commercially viable or the bands like big in the big picture. But I think that what Jimmy Eat World did that was important too was, I would assume a lot of these record companies or even the radio stations that play music looked and was like, well, holy shit, if there's even one single that pops,
right?
Look at the enormity that a good pop rock song can
especially
have right
like,
now.
Especially in 2001 when like you had one single and records, people bought CDs in 2001.
Yeah. So, you know, that's obviously having one big single is huge now for consciousness and things like that. But I don't know that there's the same financial benefit of one breakthrough yeah. song now that there. I mean, maybe you could tour off of it and you obviously get the royalties from being on shows and movies and stuff like that. Still, I'm sure Jimmy Eat World is doing pretty well off of just those if well, they and, were not making music still.
And to that point, the longevity, like Jimmy Eat World has way more albums than I thought they did.
Yeah,
they
released, and they're still kind of good.
And they're still kind of good. I saw them in 2016. They kicked ass. But like they released Futures in 2004. They released Chase This Light in 2007. They released Invited? I can't read my own writing. Invited or Invented in 2010. They released Damage in 2013. They released Integrity Blues in 2016. And then Surviving in 2019. They love nondescript album titles.
Integrity Blues is a terrible name for an album.
Yes, it is. But I've actually heard that one's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So
they're all kind of like roughly the same from Futures onward. And they're fine. They're not.
So before
I'm going to threaten the top 20 of my year on lists, but they're good.
Right.
I'd listen to them.
Before we get into sort of our ranking debate of Jimmy Eat World songs, one thing I want to talk about Jimmy Eat World is sort of their unique place they hold in my personal canon of music. Not so much what they did for me. I don't really have an emotional connection to Jimmy World at all. I can listen to Bleed American and be very much put back into 2001, but that's more nostalgia goggles than anything. What I find interesting about Jimmy World is Clarity, Bleed American, and Futures are three of, not my favorite albums of all time, but I would go to those albums any day.
Yeah, like they'll probably crack your top 100, but they might not crack,
yeah,
you know, the top 20 or whatever.
I have never listened to a Jimmy World album after Futures.
It's so weird. We have the opposite thing. Whereas I talked about, you know, Weezer was the rare example for me. Normally, I'm so loyal with a band, I'll just keep listening.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked last week. I listened to Third Eye Blind's new album in 2019. I can't help myself. So it's we're very different in that
and my
way.
My thing isn't that like I don't want to listen to them because I've heard they're good and I like this band. It's not like a Weezer thing where I was like, oh,
they're
guys
so
fucking
bad.
Suck
I,
now.
I give up.
I like Jimmy Eat World, but I just for some reason have never listened to post. Futures.
And that's maybe an element of the, you know, maybe it's the downside of having an accessible sound and accessible lyrics that like it's, I don't think you're ever going to feel like you're missing out by not checking out that new Jimmy Eat World album, right?
Yeah.
Like they're, as much as they have a high floor, the ceiling's probably pretty low on Jimmy Eat World now because there's not.
I think that's a good, yeah, I think that's true.
You're not going to, you know, you're not, there's no FOMO of like, oh, I haven't listened to the new Jimmy Eat World yet.
No, absolutely not. But it's just weird to me as someone who gets so emotionally attached to bands and that to like these records so much and be like, I don't need to listen to the rest. I'll still go see them. I'll buy a ticket to go see them and see those songs and those three albums. But I'm just like, I don't need to listen to the new stuff.
Yeah. They're fine. And like, that's the thing is you'd turn them on and you'd enjoy them, but you're not, you know, I'd tell you to go listen to a lot of albums before that.
Yeah,
from 2019 alone.
Right. And Jimmy Eat World are kind of weird in that sense, in the sense that that's exactly how I feel about them, mm-hmm. that they're just not high on the list, high floor, low ceiling, but they're so important to every band I like.
And there's also the, like, since Futures, they haven't really had like a big, good single.
That's true.
Which, you know, maybe that would have given you the push, right? Like Clarity, I think a lot of it, you know, we probably found it after the fact. I certainly wasn't listening
yeah,
to
oh,
it.
I wasn't
immediately
when I was 11.
Release.
It wasn't. Yeah.
But Bleed American and Futures were like unavoidable anyway. So they
yes.
give you that push and that introduction. Whereas the thing since then, it's like, oh, you know, I saw someone tweet that Jimmy Eat World has a new album.
Yeah.
Suppose I'll check it out.
Yeah. I think that's right. And I think that sums it up quite well. So anyway, to get into the good Jimmy Eat World songs.
Yes. There are a lot of them.
There are a lot of them. And because they are sort of a couple album centric band, this isn't the first time we've talked about this. Like similar to My Chemical Romance, where they have the two. Fall Out Boy has like the one and a half. If you want to put either side of on the two, either side of Cork Tree as a half. Jimmy Eat World, I think, can agree. Clarity, Bleed American, Futures. I've just been trying to find a place to put this in because I just want to listen to the song. Song of Futures called Pain, which was a lead single, and it just kicks so much ass. I don't feel the way I've ever felt. I know, gonna smile and not get worried. I try, but it shows. Anyone can make what I have built. And better now, anyone can find the same white pills. It takes my pain away. It's a lie. Kiss with open eyes. And she's not breathing back. Anything would bother me. Single of Futures, you can very much hear that they have fully left the, you know, emo alternative space, just basically an arena rock band, but not quite in the same way that, say, a Fall Out Boy is an arena rock band. Maybe stadium rock is a better term. We have three albums, really, of, I don't know, 36-ish songs to pull from. Blake, what are your, let's say, five favorite Jimmy Eat World songs?
It's tough, man.
It is, right?
So initially I was preparing as if we were going to debate Bleed American, Clarity, Futures as, you know, what
we can
order
do that. We can do that too.
And I thought for sure I would have Bleed American number one.
No.
And then as I went through the tracks, Clarity is so deep.
Yeah.
It's really good. And obviously Futures has some high highs.
Fun fact, the female vocals on Work, Liz Phair.
Nice.
Yeah.
Interesting. Not quite the, you know, Liza Minnelli's the bar that we have right now for random vocals, but we'll find some fun ones. That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a feeling that my top five is not.
Sorry, just to go back. What of the three? So you go Clarity, Bleed American, Futures?
I still think I like Bleed American better as a whole album, but there are definitely more songs from Clarity. If we drew out this list longer than five, Clarity would have the most songs on it.
Yeah. Okay.
But
I see what you're saying.
And that's like a weird, you know, we've gotten into this sometimes. We got into the two My Chemical Romance albums where it's like sometimes you can be a better album without as many good songs. And I think that's the case with Bleed American versus Clarity. Lucky Denver Mint is my favorite.
It's so good. It's so good.
The Time on My Own, Minutes from Somewhere Else is just, it's like such an emo lyric. Like, it's great. I have Sweetness number two, which might be a little high. It's just, you know, this is the same when we talk Sugar, We're Going Down. It's just like so undeniable as a pop rock song. It's so sing-along-y.
It's one of those songs that's going to fire you up no matter where you
are. Yeah, and for me, as someone who tends to be pretty lyric-driven in how I evaluate bands and songs, Sweetness is just like, you know what? Forget it. This song is just so
it's just fun.
So good. The rest of my top five, Table for Glasses, 23 and Episode 4.
23. Wow. Yeah,
it's a little long, but it's layered so well and it builds so well.
I like 23. I just
a little different to listen to at 33.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like when you go back and listen to The Greatest Generation from Wonder Years and it's like, oh yeah, all this angst about being 25, 26. It's like, probably a problem that I still have some of that same angst. No, I like, so Table for Glasses 23 and Episode 4 would be the round out the top five. I don't know if Episode 4 is artificially high because of the DeLonge wedding, but I love that song. And I just like, I like try to picture what Tom DeLonge's wedding would have looked like with Jimmy World playing that song.
Yeah, it's
a lot of fun.
Especially in 2001 when Blink were rich.
It's I had a tough time coming up with just the top five.
Like, it was harder than I expected.
I made a top 10 pretty easily. Like, in no other order, I probably would have had Call It in the Air, Bleed American, Pain, Praise Course, and Be Sensible as the to round out the top 10. And I had less trouble cutting that off than I did the top five. Like, I think there's 8 or 9 songs here that are like a top 8 or 9.
Yeah.
What's yours? What do you got?
I have Praise Course on number 1 because I love the references and also it bops. I have Just Tonight off track 2 off Futures.
Okay.
Number 2. I really like that song. I got Pain after that. It's weird. Futures is definitely the third, but I have more Future songs on it than I thought.
Yeah. You were also like super fired up to talk about Futures.
I was. So I love the first
I don't know that you're being entirely honest about your album rankings.
No, because the thing about Futures is the first like 5 or 6 songs are unimpeachably fantastic, and then the album just kind of stalls.
That's
how I feel about Futures. I was really torn on what Clarity song to put.
Okay.
It could have been any of Table for Glasses, Lucky Number Mint, or Goodbye Sky Harbor. I went with Goodbye Sky Harbor.
Of course you did.
Because I just admire the ambition of it. It's sort of held in this very high regard in terms of second wave emo and those circles, because no one had really done that. And I don't think it totally works. I think the breakdown, the 13-minute breakdown goes on for like 7 minutes too long. But the payoff, the like postal service-y payoff at the end is totally worth it.
Look, we're two guys talking an hour at a time about pop punk and emo albums. Of course you have one of us had to have that song in the top five.
So I think I had to put Goodbye Sky Harbor in there. Was that 3 songs now? 4 songs.
4 songs.
That's 4 songs. So my fifth song, I really want to put Sweetness, but I'm not going to because it's you picked it and just to have some variation. So thinking about it, I think I'm probably going to put Bleed American, like the title track on there. It just rips. And weirdly, of all the songs on the record, it gets stuck in my head the most. Even though it's obviously not the catchiest song.
Yeah, the riff, like the tune can get stuck in your head. I mean, for me, it's not going to be Not the Sweetness that gets stuck in my head.
That's fair.
I listened to that song so many times prepping for this podcast.
So,
like, obviously, I listened to the whole album.
Sweetness is great. It's great. So on that note, the mixtape. I think there's 3-4 contenders, really.
Okay.
The first 4 tracks on the album.
Yeah.
Or no, because Your House is in the middle there. So 4 of the 5 tracks. So we have the 4 singles are basically our options, I think. Middle, Sweetness, A Praise Chorus, and Bleed American.
To our earlier discussions about there's not a need to put the most recognizable song or the song everyone's already heard.
Yep.
I think the middle, I'm going to draw an artificial line between the middle and Sweetness.
Okay.
And I think the middle's out.
I think so too.
If you wanted Sweetness on there, I wouldn't argue, but I think I know where we're going to land on this.
See, I'm really torn on this. I actually don't have an answer for this. I don't want it to be Bleed American because I feel like it's just not the song it's not a song I would put on a mix. You know what I mean?
Okay, well then let's not put it. Look, you said you brought the album today. This is your album. You said A Praise Chorus is your favorite song on the album.
Yeah.
It's in our final 2. Let's put A Praise Chorus on there.
We're putting A Praise Chorus on. That's what we're doing.
Done.
Praise Chorus is on the mix.
Yeah, you can't put a song you wouldn't put on a mix on the mix.
In the concept of constructing a mix for somebody, why would you ever put Bleed American on?
Yeah.
It's just not gonna, unless you're like making our list to like play shinny. I don't know.
Motorcycle Drive-By and Praise Chorus is a back-to-back on this mixtape. It's going to be...
I like it.
Are we
sequencing it in the order we do the episodes?
Initially, until we have enough... until we have enough songs we can restructure it. I'd have to look at everything else we have on the mixtape right now to see if we're doing well. But we can always restructure it. And I think it's fitting that A Praise Chorus is the song choice for the mixtape. We'll be right back.
Please, try the fish.